You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Lisa Niver, a top travel podcaster, the third-rated influencer on travel in America, and the author of the new book, Bravish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. There is a classic Jewish joke. Abraham stands looking up at the heavens and says, God, let me get this straight. You say we're the chosen people, and you want us to cut off the tips of what? Of course, a bris is usually understood to mean circumcision, but in Hebrew the word actually means covenant, brit. And that concept plays a major role in the section of the Torah we read in synagogues this time of year, the great book of Deuteronomy, Devarim. I was once asked by a bar mitzvah student what the difference is between commandment, mitzvah, and covenant, brit. I explained that commanded mitzvot, or ethical acts, were ordered to fulfill, while covenant, brit, is a kind of sacred contract, a deal that we make with God. If we do this, then God will do that. A covenant can include mitzvot, but essentially it's a deal, a quid pro quo. It limits us to a course of actions specified in the contract, the brit. And oddly, it also limits God, who is stuck doing whatever God promised us if we stick to the rules. I know that I personally believe in the importance and efficacy of mitzvot, the moral and ritual ways we Jews are supposed to structure our conduct. But while I believe in the idea of brit, of covenant, I wonder if things really work that way in this world. I mean, when you do good things in life, do you expect rewards? And when you act badly, do you anticipate divine punishment coming from above? If you answer yes to those questions, well, then the book of Deuteronomy was written just for you. Here are a few choice quotations from Deuteronomy, from Devarim. If you listen to and observe these laws and guard them and do them, the Lord your God will guard you and the covenant and the kindness God swore to your ancestors. God will love you and bless you and multiply you, and God will bless the fruit of your wombs and the fruit of your lands. You shall be blessed above all other people. The Lord will protect you from all sickness and dread diseases, and so on. It says later, all the commandments I command you today you shall guard and observe to do them, so that you will therefore live long and thrive and increase and inherit the land I swore to your ancestors. In other words, here in Deuteronomy, this is a Deuteronomic covenant of perfect, complete, purely conditional love. If we do what God wants, we'll be rewarded. If we don't do what God wants, we'll be punished. This is, to paraphrase the title of a famous book by my friend the late Rabbi Harold Kushner on this subject, the theology of why good things happen to good people and why bad things happen to bad people. The book of Deuteronomy is very clear. Do good, follow mitzvot, you will surely be rewarded. Fail to do good, in fact, do evil, and you will just as surely be punished. This theology is at the heart not only of Deuteronomy, but of a great deal of religious thinking in this world. Of course, not everyone actually has this experience, and so some religions move this covenant to the next world. Do good in this life, and you'll get your reward in the great beyond, in the by and by, because you will go to heaven and enjoy eternal bliss. Do badly and you'll be punished in the fires of hell. It's a bit of a cheat intellectually, but if it works for you, cool. Some of you may, in fact, believe that life actually works the way Devarim says it does. But for the rest of us, this covenant in Deuteronomy, and we will hear some form of it every week in Jewish temples from late July through early October, can cause some real personal conflict. We know that in our own lives, it's not only the good who flourish, and not only the wicked who are punished. In fact, the correlation between ethical action and reward often seems completely random, if not sometimes inverted. We all know good people who suffer or die too young, and we all know of rotten people who seem not to suffer at all, and who flourish in spite of, or occasionally because of, their moral relativism. In fact, sometimes it seems that, as that fine Jewish songwriter Billy Joel once put it,
only the good die young. That's what I said. Only the good die young. Only the good die young.
That's right. Only the good die young. Certainly, it doesn't seem like this covenantal deal here in Devarim is actually true all the time, or even perhaps most of the time. So what are we to make of this flat statement in the Torah, repeated often in Deuteronomy, that doing right makes for happiness, and doing evil leads to destruction? The truth is, of course, that there are many things in life we don't control. Natural disasters, pandemics, unemployment, taxes, the stock market, terror attacks, hereditary illnesses, economic change, the weather, and much, much more. In fact, when you think about it, our own actions, for good or evil, are just about the only things we really do control. We have the capacity to do mitzvot, to fulfill moral acts in practical ways. When we choose to do so on a regular basis, on a daily basis, we have the ability to make ourselves good, to improve who we are as quality human beings. When we choose to do otherwise, to lie, cheat, steal, injure, or sometimes simply ignore the needs of others selfishly, we cause damage to our own character. What Deuteronomy really teaches us is that we have been given the power and strength to remake ourselves as moral beings. We can become good by acting well. We can create goodness, perhaps even holiness, by fulfilling commandment. We cannot guarantee ourselves or those we love will be safe from disease. We cannot prevent war. We cannot protect against the painful vicissitudes of misfortune. We cannot always protect loyal friends from unemployment and economic disaster. We can't even guarantee that the people we negotiate will act well, but we can, and we should, seek to perfect ourselves and our actions, make our own conduct better, holier. We should do everything we can to avoid injuring others, both their health and their well-being. We can help the stranger, support the refugee and the immigrant. We can seek to help those who are unemployed, call those who are sick, comfort those who are bereaved. If we do these things, we will fulfill our end of this covenant, hold up our side of the breach, and in this way serve God and perhaps begin to improve and even redeem this world. Now that's a covenant we can keep and be proud to maintain. To play us in this morning on Too Jewish, here's the classic Sephardic song about Brit covenant, although in this case it's actually about the circumcision of Abraham, as sung by the great Sephardic singer Yehoram Gaon.
quando la rinimerò dal campo salia, mirava e nel cielo e la estreria, vido luz santa e la giuderia, che avia de nascer Avrama vino. Avrama vino, padre querido, padre bendicio, luz de Israel. Avrama vino, padre querido, padre bendicio, luz de Israel. La mujer de Terach quedó preñada, de día en día le preguntaba, ¿de qué tenés la cara tan demudada? Ella sabía el bien que tenía. Avrama vino, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Avrama vino, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Quando la rinimrò dal campo salia, mirava e nel cielo e la estreria, vido luz santa e la giuderia, che avia de nascer Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Avraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel.
That was Yehoram Gaon singing the classic Sephardic song, Quando El Rey. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning, Lisa Niver, is a dynamic podcaster and travel influencer who decided after a kind of midlife crisis to take on all the things that had always frightened her. Her book about that amazing choice and the remarkable places it took her is called Brave-ish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. Meet Lisa Niver when she joins us in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Lisa Niver. She has a new book called Brave-ish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. She is a very popular podcaster on travel and author, and, one of the most popular travel influencers in the world. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you so much, and thank you for that very kind introduction. I'm so honored to be on your show.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. I was sitting in an airport waiting for a delayed flight recently, so I decided to put down all the countries I've been to, and I got to 50. And I thought, that's kind of a lot. And then I realized, no, I mean, 50 is a good number, but you've been to a lot more. Tell us about what 50 means to you.
Well, first of all, congratulations on 50. And you have to keep in mind, my house moved. That's how I got to so many countries. So that was very fortunate for me. But what 50 means to me, well, I did 50 challenges before I turned 50 to reinvent myself. And I just think it was such a great opportunity for me to try new things as I was getting into my next decade.
You have a really powerful and painful story early on. About kind of what prompted you to become this, you were already influential, you were already doing a lot of travel stuff. Tell us about that story a little bit from the book.
Right. So what you're talking about is my book starts with the very ugly end of my marriage and making the difficult choice to get divorced. And I, like many people, felt like a failure. I promised to love this person and it didn't work out. And it was a lot through the people in my synagogue that helped me figure out how to start again.
Can I ask, you know, sort of self-serving, which synagogue is that?
I grew up at Stephen Wise Temple here in Los Angeles, California.
Sure. As an Angeleno by birth, I know Stephen Wise well. An excellent synagogue, been so for a very long time. When you travel a lot, community is very important. But, you know, you're constantly going away from that. Do you feel that tension in your work?
I absolutely do. One of the things that I think really saved me when things were falling apart in my marriage was that I just missed being back at Stephen Wise. I missed being at Friday night services. I know what community feels like, and I knew that I didn't have that. I did go to synagogue around the world. I went to college back east, and I went to different synagogues. I remember being in St. Thomas and visiting a synagogue there. And
yeah, it's a beautiful synagogue there, actually. Sand, white sand floor. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's so interesting to see, to be in a, you know, have the same prayers, but be in a different place.
Right.
And I think that helped ground me. And now with Zoom, and certainly after all these years of the COVID coaster, like we all know that we can participate in synagogue online.
It's remarkable, and I think that as Jews, you know, we have a funny ability to connect wherever we are. You go to a shul, you go to a synagogue, and you immediately have some new sense of community. So thank you for that free advertisement for Jewish practice. I appreciate it.
Yes, it's very important to me, and being part of Tikkun Olam and helping to make the world better, I think, was a lot of how I ended up being an educator and being in teaching, that I felt like that was really important.
We will talk much more with Lisa Niver about travel, about her really terrific new book, Brave-ish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. When we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests in person. Call 520-276-5675. It's well, nearly time for school. Religious school registration is open now for school-aged children and grandchildren of Beit Simcha. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. We also have a fantastic outreach program going now. This is Judaism. Find out all about everything you wanted to know about Judaism but didn't have the time to ask. Or take our Hebrew marathon class and learn Hebrew in just two sessions. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. Friday night, come in person at 6:30 p.m. or come to our Facebook page, Shabbat Evening Celebration Services. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. and services at 10 a.m. Torah studies on Zoom and services are on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. Our wonderful religious school is in blended format, too. Some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BEITSIMCHATucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Beit Simcha Tucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Cohen, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation and community in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, 2JewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review 2Jewish. Wherever you listen to us, those comments help. We welcome a randomly recurring feature of 2Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, Haikus for Jews, koans of wisdom. The sparkling blue sea reminds me to wait an hour after my sandwich. And hard to tell under the lights, white yarmulke or male pattern baldness. That was Zen Judaism, Haikus for Jews, 2 Kohans, or Koans, of wisdom here on 2Jewish. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470 to speak to a family advisor at Evergreen. Call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking several weeks ago of kind of a view of interesting Jewish communities that are emerging and growing in places you might not expect. And we neglected Africa. We covered that last week. Let's look at some of the Asian Jewish communities, which are also extremely interesting.
Okay. Asia for me is more complicated than Africa because certainly in Western Asia, there are Jewish communities that go back to the time of the destruction of the first temple.
Right.
And that includes not only Arab countries, but also Iran and Turkey.
Turkey, yeah, absolutely.
And both in Iran and in Turkey, in spite of different types of Islam and different degrees of extremism in the governments there, there are sizable Jewish communities that are still thriving. And they haven't emptied out in the way that, let's say, Syria has, or Egypt.
Or Iraq, for that matter.
Right. So that's for the western end of Asia. Then you get to the very complicated case of India, where under the Brits, by and large, this is a gross oversimplification, but by and large, Hindus lived in India, and Muslims lived in Pakistan and what is now Bangladesh, used to be East Pakistan. All right. So those Muslim countries of Bangladesh and Pakistan have virtually no Jews and certainly no indigenous Jewish community. There may be a few diplomats or expats working in, you know, international aid, whatever, who can form a minyan when necessary, but not really a local Jewish community. India is a very different story. There are multiple Jewish communities in India, some of which are very ancient, others of which go back only into the 19th century, where the rich trading families from Baghdad settled and built synagogues and whatever.
Right.
And I'm not sure to what extent the Indian Jewish community is growing. I'm not sure it's growing anywhere near as rapidly as the communities we mentioned in Africa, but it is definitely still there and probably in some places growing, although less dramatically than in the African places we mentioned. All right, then when you get further east, the situation becomes even more complicated because there are Jewish communities and old functioning synagogues in places like Singapore and Shanghai, whatever.
I served one in Shanghai, actually. Right. I mean, it's a very interesting Jewish community.
All right. And those are not necessarily communities that were founded during the course of the 20th century. Some of them go back at least to the 19th century, if not earlier. And they are probably a remnant of colonial times. I don't think they're largely indigenous people. I think they're mostly from the imperialists, but they are different. And I was struck once when I went in New Delhi for Yom Kippur, and there were probably 2,000 people there, and the room looked like the United Nations General Assembly. There were people of every possible race, color, and hue, and many different nationalities. And you know, does that make it an Indian Jewish community or a Jewish community located in India?
Right. Semantics. Expats and people from all around the world who are there.
Yeah. But some certainly looked Indian or Burmese or, you know, from somewhere in the region, Sri Lankan, whatever. They had that distinct look. And as I said in the last show, we have a tendency to accept more easily Jews who look like us as Jews and look somewhat askance and skeptically at Jews who don't look anything like us, which a difference that manifested itself strongly in the early years of modern Israeli history when the Ashkenazim who came from Europe had a hard time dealing with the Sephardim who came from Yemen or Iraq or whatever, in large part because they looked so different.
Fascinating. And, you know, that's, I always think about, for some reason, Venice with all of its different synagogues because there were minor differences between, I mean, there were Ashkenazim, there were Sephardim, there were the Sephardim who had converted to Christianity to cover and then had their own synagogue. There were the German Jews. Like, we do make these little distinctions, and it manifests in the way we pray and in the communities we create, when in many ways it'd be a lot better to just come all together.
Sure,
Tom,
would be.
Tom, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie do, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. An artist goes to a gallery where his work is displayed. The gallery owner tells him, "Well, I've got good news and bad news." "What's the good news?" the artist asks. "The good news is a guy came into the gallery yesterday asking if I thought the price of your paintings would go up after you die. And when I told him yes, he bought every piece of your art in the gallery." "Huh," the artist asks, "and what's the bad news?" The gallery owner answers, "The bad news is that man is your doctor." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion from Deuteronomy is called Shoftim, Judges. It establishes a process for the administration of justice and includes one of the most powerful statements in all religious, philosophical, or ethical tradition. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice you must pursue. In the Torah, which has no kephel lashon, no extra words, a repetition of a word means that it has additional importance and power. Here, the word for justice, tzedek, is repeated, emphasizing that justice is extraordinarily significant. We must be not only fair in life, but truly just. But even more than that, the Torah teaches that we must not only be just, but tirdof, pursue justice, chase after it, make it a goal for our own lives and our entire civilization. It's not enough to act well in a place where justice is not the norm. We must strive to change an unjust situation into a just one. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Each of us must pursue true justice. It's easy to understand that for Jews, justice underlies everything good in a society. Without justice, there is no peace. Without justice, there is no morality. Without justice, we simply can't trust our government or its leaders to act well. Without justice, we can't trust businesses to act well. Even love is only truly possible where there is respect and a sense of fairness, which are in essence aspects of justice. Be just, God commands. Chase justice in your own life. Work for justice in your society. And then good will come. It's a great and even sacred message in a society like ours in which the pursuit of happiness seems to be the ultimate goal, but the better pursuit, indeed, the most meaningful, real pursuit for any of us, is justice. May our actions and our words help make our society more just this week and in the coming year. When we return in a moment, our guest this morning, travel podcaster Lisa Niver, will tell us her greatest challenges in creating her new book, Brave-ish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50, and how travel invigorates and inspires her, and her Jewish connections doing it. All that when we return right here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
This is the point in Too Jewish where I normally give you the news of Jews around the world. Unfortunately, this morning, because of travel complications, my wife and baby and I are on the island of Maui, where there was a terrible brush fire and an emergency area declared around Lahaina Town, where a number of people tragically lost their lives in a terrible fire. High winds, power lines down, and then just a shocking fire. Our condolences go to all of those who lost family members here. We've been without power and phone service for several days, and we're totally fine. Having said that, it does kind of bring back to mind an experience I had some years ago when I was the cantor at the temple in Santa Barbara, California. We had a terrible brush fire there. It came down San Antonio Creek Road where the temple was, blasted past and burned 400 homes, including many in the neighborhood the synagogue stood in. I remember standing on the roof of the synagogue, hosing it down before the fires could get there and then leaving. Fortunately, or rather remarkably, while there were, I think, five or six religious institutions on that road, none of them burned, while a number of wonderful homes went up in smoke.
These kinds of disasters are terrible, and we don't really know why some people are spared and others aren't, whether it's God's choice or the randomness of nature or just the idiosyncrasies of fate. The one thing that it does remind us of is how incredibly fortunate we are to be alive and healthy. Not having electricity and phone service and internet and Wi-Fi connectivity, well, in a few days it makes you feel kind of like you've jumped back 30 years. But it also reminds you that these are not necessities, not really. What's necessary is being able to eat and drink and sleep comfortably and safely. We are grateful for that now, and we're just fine. And we will make our way back to Tucson, where our home is, however we can get there and whenever we can get there. But for all of the gratitude that we have for the safety we're experiencing, it reminds us also of the fragility of life and the fact that people all over the world experience these kinds of natural disasters, perhaps at a greater rate now than they have in, well, probably centuries, and that our ability to support people in these endangered situations, well, it should be a priority for all of us. And we should remember all that we have to be incredibly grateful for: health, the basics of life, safety, and security. May it always be so, not just for Jews, but for everyone. I know this is a prayer more than a wish, but, you know, God listens to prayer. On this remarkable time, and all times are remarkable, we hope that you're safe and secure and you have everything you need on this particular Sunday and always. And that's this rather different News of Jews around the world.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Lisa Niver is a wildly successful travel podcaster and influencer. She has a new book, Brave-ish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. She has been everywhere and written and talked about it, and I'm sure she's thinking about where she's going next, because that's how we travel addicts can be. Lisa, we were talking off air just very briefly about scuba diving. You had to overcome some fears. Tell us about that.
Oh my goodness. Yes. I know that you also love scuba diving, but for me, I had problems growing up. I had all kinds of accidents. I was afraid of everything. And I just believed, like everyone told me, that I was clumsy. But it turned out, as part of getting divorced and going to all different kinds of therapy, I finally got a proper diagnosis, and I had a problem with my eyes. I didn't see like other people, and that was why I had so many accidents.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Was that correctable?
Fortunately for me, it was correctable. I have a intermittent left esotropia. It's commonly known more as a lazy eye.
Uh-huh.
And so I was able to work with an incredible doctor here in Los Angeles, Dr. Alan Brodney. He's in my book. And Dr. Brodney helped me with my eyes. I did a year of vision therapy. I went in. I committed to going in. You're supposed to go every week. And I committed to decreasing my travel. So I was here. And I did exercises every day. And there was a lot of crying.
When you discovered, I mean, for me, what really caught my, I think what triggered my love of diving was the feeling of moving in three dimensions. You know, you, in normal life, no matter where you go, I don't care if you're on a plane, you're really traveling on two dimensions. When you're diving, you can go up and down. You have this remarkable experience of space. And then there's so much to see. What was your favorite dive that you've ever done?
I have had so many incredible dive experiences. And one of my most favorite is the Sipa Dam. So Sipa Dam is off the coast in between Indonesia and the Philippines. And there's a place called Barracuda Point. And I literally was scuba diving. It looked like a tornado of barracudas. There were hundreds of them. That's how they eat in that column. They spin around in what looks like, I could only describe as a tornado. But in the photos, it looks like I'm up against a wall of them. And I just had never imagined something like that. It was incredible.
What was the scariest of the 50 challenges?
That's such a good question. So along the way, as I did the 50 challenges, they got more and more complex. The more I realized I could do, the more willing I was to try. And I was doing stories about some of them. And there were times when someone would offer me an idea. And I was like, oh, no, I can't do that. And they're like, isn't that the point of your project, to do new things? And I said, please do not use my words against me. But I did try so many things. So I had gone in California to Kirkwood to this women's ski clinic.
Yeah.
And I grew up skiing. And while I was there, they invited me to come back for this women's biking project that was called Pumps and Pedals. And I was like, oh, no, I'm a terrible biker. There's never going to happen. And over time, the woman that worked at in Tahoe, she was at North Star, she was very convinced that I could do it. And she said the magic words to me, which was that she would go with me. And that's one of the things I learned in the 50 things is, you know, you could be a lot more brave if you have a buddy.
How severe was the biking at Kirkwood?
Well, I ended up biking at North Star.
Okay.
And they promised me an instructor, and I requested one that didn't mind crying. I thought I was joking, but in fact, there was crying. And honestly, I was so difficult or needed so much help, I ended up with two instructors. Anyway, we went. I was promised only green runs. And we were on this green run mountain biking. It was a more complicated description in the book. But in essence, at some point, Shep looked at me. They wanted me to go on a blue run. And for those of you that don't ski, a blue run is intermediate. A green is a beginner.
Right.
And
but mind you, this is without snow, right? This is summertime.
In the summer. Yeah, absolutely in the summer. But they use the same runs and they use a lot of the same ranks.
Yeah, and blue runs when you're skiing, fine if you're a good skier. But they're steep. They can be quite steep. And North Star has trees and things, as I recall.
Oh, my goodness. Trees. There's ruts. Skiing,
rocks.
At least all the snow, and you have sharp edges, and I've been doing it my whole life. Anyway, he's trying to convince me that I'm good enough to go on the blue run. And I looked at him crying. And I was like, the point of my project is not to do 50 things until I die. And so Shep's explaining to me, you know, your comfort zone is so small, and I'm trying to get you to expand your comfort zone, and I'm crying. At this point, the PR person's crying. She's like, my story is ruined. And in the end, he convinces me, and I did make it down, and it is one of my favorite of the 50 things, even though it was, for me, I think, the absolute hardest. Maybe because I overcame so much, you know, my childhood fears, I'd end up in the hospital after biking. And
I'm a road biker. I used to mountain bike some, and the rocks, and I live in Arizona, the cacti convinced me it was a bad idea once I got I don't know, past about 40. But so I'm impressed that you did it, because mountain biking, I don't know, the it's not so far to the hospital in those places.
Yeah, I really wasn't sure, but I was willing to try, especially once, you know, she agreed to do it with me. I had so much gear on from the mountain biking shop that when I showed my dad a photo of me and this woman that I was biking with, my dad said, "Which one is you?"
Oh, if you're completely covered in armor, you know, you have a better chance of not getting hurt, right?
I was completely covered in armor, and I was really mad at him. I'm like, "You don't know which one I am." And I looked at the photo, and I looked at him, and I said, "Actually, I only know which one is me. It's because I know which shirt was mine."
A lot of us grew up, you know, dreaming about distant places. Where was the distant place you grew up going to, and what was it like when you got there?
So growing up with Rabbi Zeldin at Stephen Wise, yep. For me,
Shai Zeldin, I knew him well.
Of course, he is an icon.
Remarkable character.
Oh my, a remarkable speaker, incredible to grow up in his congregation. And we were always talking about going to Israel. You know, next year in Jerusalem at Passover, and he was leading trips. And so when I was a teenager, my parents took us on a cruise, and we were able to go into Jerusalem and to be at the Western Wall and put my own note in the wall and think about everything I learned in religious school. That for me was really magical.
That's a great answer for a show called Too Jewish, I have to tell
you. Thank you. It's true, though. It's true. I do think my whole career of traveling is in that line. I mean, it's this summer, the 40th anniversary of my team tour to Israel. There were 180 of us, and we're getting together next month to have a reunion. We were there for 9 weeks. We were one of the largest Olpons ever out of Los Angeles. And we just had the most incredible time in Israel. And I always held that memory when I was there in Israel. That was when I decided I would come back and study abroad in college.
What year did you go on Olpan, and were you at Meir Shvea? That's my big question.
I was there 1983, because that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I can find out if we were there, because there's people that have every single document. They found the document that had the list of everything to bring on the trip. And one of the things on the list is songs. So I wrote in the Facebook group, "That doesn't mean what it used to mean."
No, really it doesn't.
No, 40 years ago, thongs were shoes, flip-flops.
Yeah, I know. The first time I said thongs and my kids started to snicker, I realized I was from the wrong generation and I had to kind of pick up my language a little bit. When you decide where you're going to go next, what influences you now?
What influences me now about my travels is, what can I see? Who can I meet? I always want to go scuba diving, but I'm also looking for a place I can connect to or see people that I know or find something new. Like, I was just in Laredo in Mexico in Visit Baja, in Baja Sur.
Yep.
And I loved the scuba diving there, but it was also just so fun. It's a beautiful town. It's historic. There's, you know, over 500 years of history. We went to the Cowboy Museum. One of my favorite things, though, was I've been hula hooping around the world.
Huh. And that's so fun.
I hula hooped on the beach after scuba diving. And the last few trips I've been on, people have been very interested in filming me hula hooping. So it's the first time I've ever been filmed in slow motion, and that's funny. And then I had a kite from my last trip in Puerto Rico, and so I hula hooped on the beach while flying a kite. That was so silly.
In your 50 at 50 or 50 before 50 challenges, what's the greatest thing that you learned?
The greatest thing that I learned was on my final challenge. I went skydiving. And when I arrived for my turn in Oceanside near San Diego, California, There was too much cloud cover and the plane couldn't go up and we were on hold. And the more minutes I had to think about my choice, the closer I was to leaving.
Sure.
And we ended up waiting 2 full hours, 120 minutes to think about my choices. And the team didn't want any of us to leave. So the guy who was going to be my tandem guide was chatting with me about my project. And I had recently before that been in Mexico scuba diving with bull sharks, which are considered to be the most dangerous shark. I was at shark school. And my tandem guide said to me, oh no, I would never do that. I would not scuba dive with sharks. And I looked at him and I said, you throw yourself out of perfectly well-maintained planes every day for fun, and you are afraid of sharks? And that was when I realized my whole life I kept thinking that being brave was something some people had, like him, he was brave, and people like me didn't have, like a light switch. He was brave, the switch was on, and I was not brave. And that was the first time I realized that we're all a little bit brave, but in different ways.
You know, it's like the elephant being afraid of the mouse. We all have our fears somewhere deep inside, and overcoming them is part of what it means to be human, I think, and maybe what it means to be courageous, and to some degree what it means to be Jewish.
Yeah, I think that it's a process, and I imagine the first time I ever saw a shark when I was scuba diving, I think it was a nurse shark in St. Thomas, and I was like, oh my God, I'm with a shark. And, you know, I didn't know about sharks. And as I've learned over time how I should be with sharks, what are sharks looking for, you know, how to read behavior, we need experiences. We have to get out of our small bubble, out of our comfort zone, and interact. You know, the first time I was in a country where I didn't understand the language, I was like, how is this ever going to work? But I've been places where I speak 5 words of the language, and people will tell other people, oh yeah, Lisa's fluent. Because 5 words is so much more than a lot of other people attempt.
Yeah, no, it's just plunging in, if you will. I mean, intelligently. But I have to say, I have a very good accent in Spanish, and then people start talking to me fast, and I'm in deep trouble. So, you know, you also have to pick your spots. Lisa, I want to thank you for a great visit. I feel like we could go on for a really long time, but we're out of time. Where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about Bravish?
Oh, thank you so much. So Bravish is available everywhere. Amazon, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, and you can find it on my website, lisaniver.com. And I also have another website, We Said Go Travel.
Lisa, thank you so much. Keep traveling.
Thank you for having me on your show.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get a final play out and hear about next week's guest.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Yale Strom, klezmer violinist and composer, and Elizabeth Schwartz, Yiddish and klezmer vocalist, discussing their new album with the group Hot Pastrami. I'm not making that up. That's the name of the klezmer group. The Wolf and the Lamb, recorded in the historic Shach Synagogue in the Czech Republic. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. One more thing. This is Judaism is coming up. Everything you wanted to know about Judaism but never had the chance to ask. It's free, fun, 3 2-hour classes spread over 3 weeks with food to boot. But you must register. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to do so. To play us out this morning, here's a cut from next week's guest, this klezmer musician and composer Yale Strom and Hot Pastrami, their new album. It's called simply Melody from Livonia. My friends, have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, a healthy week. Stay cool out there, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.